There's a whole part of the hobby that some people are too quick to dismiss.
To Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
And Red Powell.
Hello.
We are the Bell of Lost Souls podcast. On this show, got a really special segment with a player spotlight from someone who's just getting into Warhammer or getting back into Warhammer. They're currently, I think their main jam is Magic Gathering. Going to be speaking with Pleasant Kenobi here in just a couple of minutes.
That's cool. Transition from game styles.
Yeah, it's really cool. I'm interested to hear what he's got to say about the transition. I want to know about the transferable skills or what he thinks 40K can add to his MTG or what MTG can add to his 40K.
Yeah, yeah. We get to a little bit of that. Yeah, I mean, it's a great conversation. As a matter of fact, let's just go ahead and jump to that. We'll do that. Then we'll come back with you guys and we'll talk some 40K.
Nice.
See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, welcome to a very special player spotlight segment on Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Vince, also known as Pleasant Kenobi on the internet.
Hello, hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me.
No worries at all. I'm quite excited for this. I love talking about Warhammer.
Well, see, I've noticed that. See, okay, you're a Magic player. I don't know if you want to be known as just a Magic player, which I'm not trying to put it in that box, but I've found you, your content, you actually stream games on Channel Fireball.
Yeah, so I am a professional, a full-time content creator, so I make YouTube content. I put out between 4 and 7, sometimes even up to 8 videos a week of Magic and, I guess, hobby-adjacent stuff. I started out making the typical video game YouTube stuff that no one cares about because it's a saturated market. I started making Magic content that stuck a bit better and I enjoyed making it more. I got my name playing silly decks in competitive environments. And then very recently during COVID, much like everybody else on the planet, I got back into Warhammer after having played it for or done anything with Warhammer for literal decades after playing as a kid.
Yeah, so that's what I discovered your content, like the way you do it. And I do. I like, at least my perception is you have decks that are, I'd say, you know, maybe fringe, you know, not just just the straight meta decks or whatever, but you're vested in the outcome. You actually try to play to win games.
Yeah, definitely. I got known for playing really wild stuff. So not even like fringe. We're talking like literal memes. Like, I don't know what the Warhammer equivalent would be. I don't know, triple, quadruple, Great Unclaimed One builds or something just for the sake of it. That sort of stuff. But I was playing like mono blue Minotaurs, which is not a tribe, for example, or taking like a meta deck called Tron and just playing it way off kilter with completely different win conditions for the sake of it. And decks that are bad, but they spin a narrative. So I did a deck, some people might hate this, but it was called the Brexit deck. And the whole video was about how this deck was a metaphor for what was happening with Brexit in the UK. And the point was the deck couldn't win and it just spun its wheels and then shot itself in the foot. That's the whole point of it. It's like a narrative told through Magic. But I also do a lot of commentary on the game. I do a lot of videos talking about the company that makes it and where they're going with it and all that stuff. So I'm a fully fledged, all over the place, every part of Magic, every format of Magic content creator.
To catch up my Warhammer friends as to why blue Minotaurs... Minotaurs are normally red, not an overly supported tribe. I guess, or white too. Maybe they're not blue.
Yeah, traditionally Minotaurs are red. There are some white ones. You are right. The whole thing was that you turned the biggest, baddest creatures in the game, like the Emrakuls and the huge monsters, the most powerful in the game. You transformed them into Minotaurs, then fired them out. Did you do it, your opponent? The whole thing was an absolute meme, but it was one of the videos that blew up and helped my channel get to where it is. So yeah, I'm known for being a bit. I'm serious in, like you said, in my intent, but I'm not serious in my application. And I'm also just very jovial, a bit cynical, I guess. But yeah, that's my background.
I love that. And so, and then the Tron is like summoning out huge, giant, Cthulhu-esque beast and bashing people's face in and destroying their stuff. So
yeah. But I decided to change it to putting all that matter into a one-shot fireball, which is not what you should be doing. It's completely against the idea.
That's old school. Magic, but... That's a Magic 101.
Yeah, it resonated with people. People loved it. People have built it and played it at FNM. But I have to prepare people saying, don't build this and play it at FNM if you want to win. This is not the way you win tournaments.
That's even the origin of the Channel Fireball's name is...
It is. Yeah, it is. It's the oldest, one of the oldest Magic cards combos of all time, the spell Channel and the spell Fireball. So Channel Fireball being not, so if people are wondering, I don't know, Channel Fireball are not me, Channel Fireball are my sponsor. They're one of the biggest sellers of Magic cards in the world, basically, and they've run a lot of the big tournament circuits. They're probably comparable to Frontline, because Frontline run the ITC, and Channel Fireball used to run all the GPs, although with the blessing of the parent company.
Yeah, there you go.
G-Dub have kind of stayed out of things until very recently, haven't they?
And on your channel, you started doing some Warhammer content about your journey into Warhammer. Yep. And I thought, you know, hey, you know, this is great because, I mean, there are some people that are getting into it either because they had an interest as a child or because they find themselves in their house for X more hours a day or a week or whatever. And Warhammer is a great outlet for that.
Oh, definitely. So I got back into it for a couple of reasons. I guess this is a natural segue. Magic has been going through some rough spots, like across the board, with like power creep, a lot of need for bans, which is something you don't really see in Warhammer. You see nerfs, obviously, but not bans. And because of that, it causes burnout, especially when it's like my job. So that, in addition to COVID, in addition to having more hobby time, because my main hobby, Magic, is now my job, so I've got other hobby time. I just said to my wife one day, like, oh, I've always wanted to pick up some Warhammer. She just said the magic words of, why don't you? And I was like,
Did you tell her anything about it before you did that? Or
She'd walked into Games Workshops with me, and we'd looked at the models, and then she's got, like, bored and wanted to leave, and I'm like, okay, we can go now.
But see, she probably meant, get yourself a kit of Space Marines.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
I'm kidding. I'm not trying to put it on her. I think it's just funny.
No, she was laughing when I was getting as deep as I am, because I've been playing since May, and I have four armies, sorry. I've got Necrons, Custodes, Blood Angels, and Demons. Oh, Demons are the smallest. Blood Angels, though, I have, like... last time I ported it up, it was approaching 9,000, but I've bought stuff since... Not all of it's built, not all of it's painted, obviously.
Angels are my jam. Like, that's my primary army. Yeah.
They were my army as a kid. I loved them as a kid. I don't know why I got into them. It might have been some of the first minis I ever got given were, like, randomly red, I guess. But yeah, so I've got very deep into it. I have a lot of variety and options available to me, and I'm loving it. I never thought I'd enjoy painting. That was the thing. Is that I wanted to play Warhammer, because coming from a magic background, the game itself is quite important. And I thought I'd hate painting, and I painted my first mini, and I kind of fell in love with it. Thanks to YouTube and tutorials and Miniac.
Oh, YouTube University is where it's at. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I thought I was going to be awful. And after I watched a lot of Duncan, a lot of all these big YouTubers as well, and then I kind of knew what I was doing, because they actually teach you the fundamentals, which is something that I didn't know as a kid.
The products across the board, you know, GW, of course, but then other vendors as well, are great. They're a little bit more conducive to making themselves easier to use, where that, you know, combined with not knowing how to use it, and then the products themselves being a lot different back then, it's a way different world now.
100%. So for some context, I was playing back when third edition was a thing. That was as a kid. And by playing, I mean we might have set up. We probably never finished a game. Like, you know, as a kid, you don't really know what you're doing. And I had the third edition starter box. My best friend painted his Marines Black Templars. I painted my Blood Angels. And then obviously I fell out of the game as I, like, you know, you go for a period in secondary school or high school, as you'd call it, where you're like, oh, I can't like nerdy things. And then I never come back to Warhammer because I never had, it needs a bit more disposable income, right? But now I'm back in it. Yeah, the technology is so much better. Like texture paints for basing, even contrast paints is like a utility tool. All the information be available to you on YouTube as well, like different brushes. Yeah, the technology has come leaps and bounds since I was a kid.
So you've enjoyed it. So now you've got your, like, what were the first set of models that you got coming in fresh? And I believe, if I heard right, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think you like transferred some of your like magic hobby and used it to funnel into like a Warhammer hobby.
Yeah. So a friend of mine recommended, perhaps poorly. So it's interesting because I've been doing a lot of recommendation videos and how to get started and stuff in my channel. But a friend of mine recommended like the push fit intercessors, the push fit reavers, the push fit aggressors, I guess just some sample models, and the push fit redemptor. I put it all together. And I didn't know what was going on with the rules or anything. I bought a couple of like Blood Angel accessory kits too. Put it all together, started paying it all and everything, started loving it, and then quickly realized that this wasn't an army. Like I literally had two half squads, one half squad of Reavers and one half squad of Intercessors. And I was kind of bugged out by that. I even told him, I said that wasn't helpful. And he's like, oh yeah, maybe I hadn't thought that through. But I fell in love with the Redemptor.
But you were hooked at that point, so he did his job.
Absolutely. Yeah, he did the right thing there. Definitely. And then I was like, I bought more push fits. And then, like you said, I sold a magic deck. So I sold what's called a legacy deck, which is a magic deck that is cards from throughout Magic's history. So from back in the day, from the very first set right to now, every card is available. there's a band list, quite a big band list, getting rid of some of the most broken stuff throughout Magic's history. But it's the deck where it's this format where the decks can be very expensive. So this deck was upwards of £1,000 once I sold it, and then I put that back into Warhammer. I started going on eBay and getting very excited and buying kits, pre-ordered Indomitus because this was just before Indomitus. Got all my stuff I had as a kid, and then some. I never owned a drop pod as a kid, but always wanted one. So I was like on eBay straight away, pick up a drop pod, picking up Death Company and Dante and Tycho and all these characters I remember from a kid. I didn't really understand what they did, but so
Dante,
yeah,
now if you haven't got him on the table recently with his new stuff,
he is a monster.
He's amazing.
Because I got told when I picked a load of this stuff up, I keep getting told this a lot on social media, certain models or units are bad. I don't really care. Like the Hammerfall Bunker might not be this top tier unit, but it looks cool and I want to play with it. But it's cool now that Dante was bad, or at least people are telling me, and then the index has made him pretty good. Like he's borderline actually a smash captain, just not very good against vehicles, I guess, because he only has strength 7.
He's not bad being a Blood Angel, getting that plus. Well, so I could talk Blood Angel with you all day.
Get into the weeds. But yeah, all his stuff and like the command points and everything. I'm just like, I just hope we get a Supreme Commander when the new book comes. That's what I want.
Yeah. So what we talk about is Warhammer players is not often, and we say things are bad, but what we really mean is they have a weird value efficiency. In that, maybe this is true of Magic. You let me know if this is the case. Like, it's either for what it does, we don't think it has a great point value, or for, you know, what it cost dollar wise, it's, you know, you don't get as much on the table or whatever. We're making all these value assessments, whether or not we're saying something is good or bad. But I think you really nailed it there, was that you have a relationship, either because of you couldn't get it then, you wanted it now, you've always wanted it, you like the way it looks or whatever. That's something that we all share. Like we're making our own value judgments in our head, and we should not be necessarily shamed by the internet unless efficiency is our only goal.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a tendency towards, when talking about units and what they do, is this tendency towards the competitive, and it happens in Magic as well. You get like a card taking up one of your 60 cards in your deck, that is in essence some of your points, because it's a slot you're not using for something else, right? But like Warhammer, beyond what Magic does, so there's some things that Warhammer does very well, and what Warhammer gives you is other hobbies. So like building, kit bashing, converting, and painting are all parts of the hobby that Magic doesn't really have a huge parallel to. There are some people that paint on cards and do alters and stuff, and they're amazing, but that part doesn't really exist in Magic. So if you pick up a terrible card, you're just collecting it to go in your collection binder, which is a thing. People collect cards, like collecting cards is part of
the
thing.
You want to foil out your whole collection or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Or someone wants to collect, I don't know, I used to have like 30 plus copies of Niv-Mizzet at one point, because it's just a fun thing I had in the back of a folder. But yeah, it's not quite the same as like, I only bought a Great Unclean one because I wanted to paint a Great Unclean one, and I painted it, then I got to play with it, and now I'm like, oh, I think Nurgle is also my jam, and start picking up Nurgle stuff, you know? So yeah, I think there's a whole part of the hobby that some people are too quick to dismiss, which is the literal painting and building part is just fun as a project, right? It doesn't have to be a unit that's going to win you a local game store tournament to be something you might want to build and paint.
Yeah. You're finding that with yours? I mean, you mentioned it initially, your initial buy-in, but like, what is your perception of things now that you're a few months into this new journey?
I'm in a weird spot because I'm playing a lot on Tabletop Sim. I stream once a week on Tabletop Sim. I play with some of my patrons on Tabletop Sim, and we talk about Warhammer with all these people that are stuck in lockdown playing on Tabletop Sim. And I've just started going to my game store, and I'm already at this point where like they are all telling me that I'm not the casual. I thought I was the casual, but I've rocked up, and I'm like, they're like, they don't know how to deal with Silent King. They don't know how to deal with the Great Unclean one. And there's all these questions coming up where I'm like, oh wow, I guess I've accelerated. Because I think it's Magic. Magic tunes you to play, when you play the 1v1 Magic formats, tunes you to try and play in an efficient way. So it's pushed me towards this weird competitive end. And also my content was meant to help people get into the game. It was meant to share my experience of getting into it. But now I'm starting to talk about, you know, what the stat sheet is, how many attacks do I get on the charge, is it efficient for its points, is it worth taking X over Eradicators?
Oh, you have the bug. Yeah.
I do, and I love it, but I'm trying to peel back a bit and trying to be more, I think I'm going to do some content around like how to start certain armies and stuff, but yeah, that's a different topic. So yeah, I'm in a weird spot where I'm so deep.
You're standing on the edge of a cliff.
I think I'm off the cliff. I really am.
Oh, so but Morpheus has already had the conversation with you. Which pill do you take? And you've
but the thing is, I'm also handing those pills out to my friends. Like, loads of my mates have got back into it over COVID, about my close friends, and they're all laughing because of how deep my army collection is going, and how I'm like telling them, well, when are we next playing? Or have you picked this up? I'm encouraging them to paint. One of my friends just hasn't painted his Indomitus yet, and he's moaning at me because he thinks his army, his Black Templars, are bad. I'm like, paint your Eradicators. They're so good. Play those. Come on.
Look, if this is like some kind of subtle cry for help, you're talking to the wrong guy. Like, go for it. Get all in.
No. I'm loving it. And it's refreshing as well because I'm so steeped in card games. It's nice to sidestep into it's still a tabletop hobby. It's still got a tactile feel to it. It's still something I can be proud of when I look at my models and stuff, but it's nice. It's refreshing. It's different. Cool. Video games don't give that because I've played video games all my life consistently. It's got to the point where Warhammer and Magic have taken over video games. I don't really play any video games anymore because I'm too busy painting or...
Yeah, Warhammer your hours you spend the hours that you would have been sitting there playing that video game, you could be building a model or painting the model and maybe playing.
To be honest, that's a very good point that I don't talk about much. So what was happening during lockdown is I was going through a bit of a nostalgia phase and I rebought Skyrim on the Xbox 360, Xbox One. Started playing it and I was like, yeah, okay, it's scratching a bit of a nostalgia. And that's when I had the Warhammer conversation and I bought some Warhammer and I have not loaded Skyrim since. That wasn't enough nostalgia. That wasn't early enough in my life. You know, let's get on to painting these little men in robot armor, you know?
Well, each one's got their own little personalities, man. You're thinking about what they're going to do on the tabletop. That's one of the biggest draws, and we talk about that a lot on the show. So I'm going to say it again. It's like you really are. It's the fantasy of the game. It's like you're spending so many hours, you know, with the figures, posing them, painting them, giving them their individual squad markings, you know, or whatever. And then you're building your list. You're reading about the game. You're reading a novel about the game, you know, and then you put it on the tabletop and trying to live this fantasy out.
Yeah, you get a very intimate connection to your models because of the posing and the painting and the time you spend with them, right? Like, I don't think you get back to... You don't get back... Maybe with, like, RPG characters in D&D or other video games that are like that. Like, I can see why people get so fanatical about The Witcher when you spend so many hours with Geralt and stuff.
Playthrough of Las Vegas, you know, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, yeah, you look at a model and you think that looks cool. Like the Hammerfall Bunker or... What was the last really cool thing? Stuff in the Indominus box, like the Blade Guard vets and stuff. Oh, they look cool. And by the time I finish building them and painting them, I'm like, not only do they look cool, but now I know... This sounds like a weird thing to say. I know what that rack looks like, right? I know every inch of that model because you put it together, you painted it, and you get that intimate feel. Like, I'm literally sat here looking at my Contempt of Dread that I finished, like the Blood Angels one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, I liked the model before, but I love it now because I spent, I don't know, 7 hours painting the bloody thing, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. So coming into it, I mean, we haven't talked about too much about playing, but how are you feeling? You know, you mentioned that, I guess, your game store buddies think that you're now the whack. I'm not labeling that. Like, win at all costs means different things to different people. But you have a vested outcome, or interest in the outcome of the game, and that is influencing your choices.
What's that? Is that a slang? I don't know.
Oh, win at all costs. So some people think that if you're trying to win the game, that it automatically puts you into this category of WAAC, win at all cost.
Ah, that's a new term I haven't heard before.
It's a negative thing, you know, because they also, yeah, you know, yeah. it's not a great name to have, but we toss it around a lot in the divide between casual and competitive play.
Yeah, I came into the game, like I said, at 8th, just as Knife came out, so I had to make the change across to that. And like I said, I thought I was being very casual with how I was playing. Maybe it's because I'm listening to a lot of like podcasts and content that's talking about very competitive levels, so I feel casual. But then when I stepped into my game store, away from my Discord, away from my patrons, the people I was playing with, suddenly they were all like we had a, so here's an example. We had a 500 point combat patrol tournament, a 3 rounds, 6 people only because of COVID. I went down with my Great Unclean One, 3 Nurglings, a Demon Prince, thinking... Oof.
So you're not making friends. That's right. I'm on their side now.
But I thought I was going to come up against like intercessors, a captain, and 2 squads of eradicators, and like, you know, get melted or something, yeah. Right? But then everyone was just like, barring the Imperial Guard player, everyone was just like 3 squads of intercessors, and I was like, oh no, this is not what I expected. I expected like, you know, some other units that are good.
Yeah,
not good. That's not what I'm saying. Powerful. Well, so yeah, that made me then look at the villain, and that's how it's kind of. I bought the Silent King out for 1,000 point game because we can't play 2,000 point games in COVID because they've got the space to have 3 tables set up for 2,000 points. So I bought the Sonic King out and he just sort of span around the table, killing everything. And then, so I think the initial perception I've given out to my game store is that I bring the biggest, most powerful unit available, which is not true. That is not true.
Those models look cool. So
exactly.
You did actually buy them and paint them.
So I was like, I have to play it, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you. No, I'm kidding. I actually don't. I don't have those perceptions, and I think that if you're going to something to where the outcome is measured, that it's completely fine to bring something brutal, and everyone is kind of obligated to do that, or they know what they're getting into.
I agree. So the problem we've had a lot of conversation about this at the store with the store owner, because I'm getting quite friendly with him and stuff, and the guy running the tournaments, and I was saying like the moment you call it a tournament, you stop. like incentivizing fluff and flavor and narrative play, and you're saying, even if there's not an actual prize in the line, but there's a standings, you're incentivizing people to come along and beat the other people. And my Nurgling list was not designed just to beat everyone. It was literally just the only points of Nurgle I owned.
It fit in the slots.
Yeah, exactly. So we started having that conversation. There's a lot of us in Magic too. When you play the multiplayer, four-player format called Commander or EDH, I don't know how familiar you play. Do you play Commander?
I don't play. I mean, I use the pre-cons and I play with friends.
Okay. So there's a lot of talk in that format where that format is not about winning. So when you play 1v1 Magic, you're there to win. It's very rare you're there just to muck about. You're going to go to an event, even like a Friday night at your game store, and look to win. Commander is a whole different ballgame, because Commander is where you get to play decks that are standard spells, and spells you never get to play in the other formats. And it's all about the social contract of having fun. Beer and pretzels Magic. And there's a conversation you have beforehand of like, how powerful is everyone's decks? Can we try and be on the same wavelength, right? Mm. And I think that's a conversation that actually happens about Warhammer more than it does Magic, because they're all saying in the store, they're all saying how they're all now, there's this term they keep using, which is narrative players.
Yep.
And I'm still there thinking I'm not a narrative player. I'm just appreciating that some units are stronger than others, I guess, and building lists with synergy. I mean, they're not doing that. But yeah, people don't want to take it. I think there's also a thing, they don't want to take it too seriously. No one wants to be seen to be taking it too seriously.
I get, yeah. I can understand that. And with narrative too, like in the name, even the name of this show, sometimes we use narrative ironically.
I'll be honest, when I listened to the episode about Nurgle, and your guest was talking about synergistic builds of Nurgling demons and soup lists and stuff, I was surprised, because when I saw Forge the Narrative, I was like, oh, I was expecting this to be about lore. And then you guys were like deep in the metagame of how to play demons in the current metagame. And I was like, okay. So that is interesting.
Yeah. So again, but there's also, it means different things to different people. And so that communication that you're talking about with your potential opponent or community of game people is very important. I mean, because look, you want to come to the table, and look, I know casual gamers that would never, ever, ever consider themselves competitive, but they take some of the most cutthroat stuff you've ever seen in your life and call it something different. To them, it means something different.
Yeah, there's a lot of semantics involved with that stuff as well, right? Like, so I was going to play Custodes this week. I get to go to the game store once a week. But I'm starting to ask ahead to try and gauge whether the people that are going to be mad if I bring the Silent King and stuff. And my opponent was also on Custodes this week. This is tomorrow night. And they said to me they're a narrative player and they prefer not to play Custodes on Custodes because it breaks the narrative. And I was like, cool, I'll take something else. So I'm starting to open that conversation up. I never thought Warhammer would be much. I always assumed Warhammer would be super, what's the word, try hard or sweaty in terms of how everyone plays, but I'm learning very quickly that the people in my local area just are not like that. Well, they want to play softly.
You're crafting, your culture crafting an experience, and especially if you're going to go, I mean, think about it, you're going to go burn X amount of hours of your life. Sometimes it's fine to ask for things like, yo, can we do no inventory? You know, I'm pulling something weird out, you know, can we no special characters or all the special characters? I mean, you know, it's easy, or it's equal parts okay to request anything when you're building this community, this social contract essentially with your opponent across the table.
Definitely. I think there's a weird line that gets drawn where people try to balance environments through the wrong means. So the other one that's being discussed at the moment is 1,000-point games. They're saying no named characters. And I was like, is this a flavor thing or a balancing thing? And they've said it's both. And I don't, it's like saying you can't, in a game of Magic, don't play any legendaries. Like, it doesn't change it. Like, the Great Unclean one's not legendary. It's not a named character. So I've been saying, I'm trying to, I don't think they're getting it. That's not changing the balance of the game. That's just like shutting off the Necrons from having access to the Catan, you know?
Things are not created equal. Like a troop choice in the Marines is not the same as a troop choice in the Eldar, for instance.
Yeah,
and that's the classic thing I point to. A Space Marine Intercessor or a Firstborn or whatever you want to call them, tactical squad dude, is not the same as an Eldar Guardian. And so, you know, you just kind of, but it is a cooperative experience. You're actually playing a cooperative game with your opponent. Do you feel that way about Magic? Do you feel like Magic is a cooperative game, or are you just there to flip your cards? And
In Commander, in the multiplayer formats, where there's more than two people at the table, 100%. But the whole point is to have a fun, have a laugh. No one should take it seriously. There's never any prize in the line. There's that style of game never has a tournament. In 1v1, I think that's like a bit of a meme where like the amount of fun at the table is finite and you don't have to share it with your opponent.
It's a zero sum game.
Yeah. So like there are decks that I quite like playing, these decks that are called Prison or Stacks. And the idea is that they will play cards that actively stop your opponent from playing anything. So you'll play cards that make their cards cost 3 mana minimum, and then you blow up their lands and stuff like that. And that's a valid strategy to win. So if you're playing in a competitive environment, that's fine. But if you did that in the four-player games, people would literally never want to play with you again. Yeah. So, yeah, it differs. And that's one of the pros of Magic. There's a lot of varied formats.
Well, a game of Magic takes 15 minutes. You're taking, and so you could get on with the rest of your life pretty quickly with Warhammer.
The four-player games take hours.
Oh, no, I meant a one-on-one game where you're being abusive, you know, or really aggressive with your deck.
Being oppressive, I guess. Yeah. But I think the four-player, like, casual format of Magic has a lot of similarities to Warhammer. The time involved, the social contract element, but yeah, I guess you've got to figure out if your opponent's coming into it the same perspective as you as well, right? They might be coming in cutthroat too. So they might be looking to table you on turn one, and if you're cool with that, then, you know, all's fair in love and war, right?
But it's interesting to see, you know, I guess where you think you are right now through the lens of people that have been in the hobby for a while. I assume that some of these folks have been in for a while, and some of them you know, may have been new with that. It's interesting.
Oh, 100%. And it's just like in Magic, the word casual is kind of dirty. Like, it's often used in like a binary, like casual and real. Like, am I playing real Magic or casual Magic? And it's a thing that like the community collectively is trying to break down. Like, I keep saying, like, casual is not a dirty word. And I guess you have that, you have this distinction, this binary in Warhammer a bit between narrative and competitive. And I think also, but Warhammer's competitive scene is exploding, right? Like, in the last couple of years alone, it's gone, like, the attendance and the viewership of like LVO.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the game itself is way more open and people, and it's accessible through for lots of reasons, but it's just a lot more accessible.
Well, than it used to be, you mean?
Yeah, than it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's interesting that, like, I'm not saying Warhammer's competitive scene is in its infancy, because it's not, because it's been going for years, but, like, comparing it to Magic, where Magic's competitive scene is kind of winding down almost because the parent company is starting to care less and less about big tournaments, especially with COVID coming up, right? But it's interesting to see Warhammer seems to have its competitive scene booming. It seems to be a thing that people are pushing to be a real thing now, you know? Especially with them, like, creating, like, mission, like, GW actually making a mission packet that seems comparable to old ITC stuff, right? Like, yeah, so it's interesting that Warhammer's distinction or binary between narrative and competitive will probably grow a little bit before it, like, you start to dismantle it, because competitive play is being kind of pushed a little bit by GW. They seem to be keen to get the game to be a thing you could watch on Twitch or something, you know?
Yeah. Was it, I mean, I guess with, you're not playing Magic, you're just doing this as well.
No, I'm doing this as well. I'm playing a little bit less Magic, but I think everyone who plays Magic is playing less Magic right now. A, because of COVID.
Yeah.
And B, because of there's been just a series of very unhealthy environments to play in due to power crept cards, and the company are aware of it. They're banning stuff and saying they're gonna, like,
but I think there's been more bans in the last 2 years than there have been in the last 20 years or something like that.
To an extent, the stats vary a little bit off from that, but you're right. Like, there has been in the last that statement is holds true, because we just had the last couple of bans we needed to get to like the 19 bans in 2 years. Yeah, it used to be a time that Magic didn't ban anything in its standard format, the format that rotates, the format that the majority play.
The thing that they actually spent the most time developing for right now.
Exactly. And the thing that's in Arena, the digital client and stuff, there never used to be bans. Or at least when there were bans, it was a huge deal when everyone talked about it. And there was like two bans in like 5 years ago together once. It was a big deal. And then over the last 2 years, we've had nothing but bans. Like every other month. We've had a card banned a week after it was released recently. And people are starting to jokingly like say, oh, I'll be Yu-Gi-Oh now, which is a much more liberal ban philosophy.
We on the Warhammer side, we do course correct with FAQs / erratas and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. And this is a conversation I had in a video recently. I say conversation, I opened up the conversation with my audience because, like, Magic doesn't digital errata or anything. Cards can't be errata or FAQ. There were some have been, a little bit, but they try to make all the game pieces function as they seem. Where Warhammer, things change constantly almost. Like, since May, the amount of new rules and new data sheets and FAQs and stuff I've had to learn has been kind of daunting and almost off-putting. Like I can sit down to a game 2 weeks after another game and suddenly my model doesn't do what it did back then because of the FAQing and the changing to lookout server rules and then new codex and then indexing the weapon updates. It's, I guess it'll calm down once all the codices are out, but it's been kind of daunting.
Yeah, then we start the whole process again. But what I was asking about playing Magic is, you know, what skill set do you think transitioned the most easy between the two different games? You know, do you think there's an overlap? Is it completely different?
Oh, it's such a good question. Generally a really good question. I think there's definitely an overlap. I'm struggling to think of direct comparisons. Like, I guess thinking ahead to what your opponent will do, like, this is a thing that you do in any game, right? Like, but like forward planning, there's a lot of like new Magic players and I guess new Warhammer players who are so focused on what their cards or models are doing that they aren't thinking about positioning of their opponent's stuff, their aura bubbles, their synergy, like where they're going to put their psycho and that sort of stuff. So that definitely translates. Oh, I'm really struggling, but I definitely think there is overlap because both games are so hinged upon RNG, right? Like, your dice can go for you or against you. And in Magic, the deck, what you draw can go for you or against
you. Oh, so many lands.
Yeah, you can just flood out on lands, which has always been heralded as a way that like good new players can beat the best players. But they're trying to fix that with cards now that are lands on the backside. And you can play them as either way and stuff. So they're trying to fix the RNG element. So there's definitely comparable things. Like, you've got to play to your outs. Like, sometimes you're out as your opponent making a mistake. Sometimes you literally have no way to win unless your opponent, you know, doesn't go for that objective or misses a secondary because they didn't think about it or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there are comparable things, definitely. But I'm finding it very hard on the spot to make direct comparisons.
No. Playing to your outs is I think, a big point. I mean, you can do the same thing in Warhammer to the degree that you have to always be playing towards the objective in mind. Like, how many points, where are my points and how do I get them? And if that means moving off, you know, out of cover to get to the points, then you have to make that calculated risk.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, mapping a game plan is definitely something as well. Like, knowing what your army can and cannot do. And there's a good comparison. Deck building to army list building. Like, understanding what the metagame is. This is like an obvious thing again in some ways, but knowing, like, you know, Marines are on top, or you're going to see a lot of, I don't know, Eradicators or Blade Guard Vets. You're going to see 2 wound and 3 wound models. So that informs you that 1 wound shooting guns aren't good unless they have a lot of shots and so on and so on. And then you need to, like, figure out what you want to beat that week or weekend or anything like that. Or just ask yourself, can your deck, or in this case army, answer infantry, answer, this is the base level stuff, right? Answer infantry, answer tanks, and hold objectives. And if it can't do one of those three things, you need to go back to the drawing board with how you build your list. So, like, deck building and list building are probably the two very closest things. To the point that then someone like me can go, well, I'm not going to worry about any of those things. I'm going to meme it up and play, like, only bikes or whatever, you know?
Anything on four legs is what you're playing, or something like that, yeah.
Yeah,
or three
exactly.
legs, but as far as Necrons go. I'm only playing three-legged Necron stuff.
Yeah, that is actually a thing you could do as a stipulation. I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, it's the list building is obviously one of the big comparisons too. So the more you understand about other people's armies and other people's decks, the more you learn. So like in Magic, when I play Modern or Legacy or whatever, I tend to know the majority of the decks that are being played and roughly what cards are in them. When it comes to Warhammer, like, I still haven't played a game against Jeans to the Cult. Like, I have no idea what they do.
It's a tough army to collect. It really is.
Exactly, but I mean, I will probably lose my first game against them because I won't know what their characters do. They'll like, oh, by the way, this, like, I will, like, you know, charge in or something about, oh, the warlord trait here is fight first, and you're like, oh no. Like, so, I mean, like, knowledge yep. is key. Knowledge is important, and I guess you can do that by reading other people's codices if you're really, really going for it. And I guess that's a good idea before tournaments, but a bit heavy for where I'm at the moment.
No, that's cool, man. It's really nice to hear your perspective and see this journey, you know, coming from, I like your content a lot and seeing how it transitions into this. Yeah, it's been great talking with you.
Oh no, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. If you ever want to chat Blood Angels, let me know.
Oh, definitely. Like, if I'm ever going to an actual tournament, I might hit you up for some ideas about, like, my list and stuff.
Well, Vince, where can people find you?
So I mainly make YouTube videos as a YouTuber over at youtube.com/PleasantKenobi. It's a lot of Magic and at least one weekly video about Warhammer, usually talking about my journey through the game, what's happening currently in Warhammer, new stuff that's coming out, and general stuff. Like, I'm talking about the worst products that GW put out in the last couple of years that I've seen in this week's video, for example. And I stream regularly on twitch.tv/PleasantKenobi, where I'm streaming Magic once a week, Tabletop Simulator, Warhammer once a week, and a bit of variety once a week as well. And I'm really active on Instagram and Twitter as well, where I talk about, you guessed it, Magic the Gathering and Warhammer. And I also talk a bit about D&D when my D&D group is back together, but due to COVID, we haven't played in a while.
Well, Vince, man, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. Hopefully I can have you on again sometime.
All right, buddy. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for letting me on. A bit of a Freudian slip there.
Hey, man, you're used to it.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see you.
Cheers, buddy.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
And we are back. It was great talking with Vince. I mean, it's one of those things to where, you know, it's neat to hear his transition from getting in and then wanting to play and then kind of coming into the community and seeing how things go. We talk a little bit about, like, his evolution of army list and how he's bringing, like, some heavy hitters into small point games. and not kind of realizing what ripple effects that has in this small community. It's neat.
Well, because it is really is something that's quite unique to, well, it might not be unique to 40K, but it's more localized to tabletop gaming than it is to card games, isn't it? Like card games, you just, you got a card in your pack of random cards. Guess you're going to use it. Is it a good card? Guess you're going to use it. And here, you play a faction that has this super oppressive build that is, and it's going to take 3 hours for you to put your opponent through possible misery for a resolution of a game. It's not quite the same thing, is it? Apples and oranges, but there are enough comparisons that you can get pretty deep into the correlations between two game systems. But at the same time, there's not much point.
Yeah, well, I think that when you do have either a tight knit, you know, it's the same 8, 10, 5 people or whatever that are playing, that you should have some open communications about like what you want out of the game. I mean, like that's one of the things like we talk about with pickup games. And that's why I think the match play system is so important, that you can, like, it gives us a series or a set of given things. Like we can walk in and say, let's play 2000 point match games or match play game. And then we know kind of what to expect.
Yeah. You set your expectations at the door when you walk in.
But if, you know, then we can easily say, yo, I want to play a game and, you know, I want us to only use fast attacks, or I want to set up where I go first, or, you know, something. You can have that discussion with people, and you should all, you know, and if you feel like the status quo is not fitting the bill, then, you know, have that dialogue, open it up.
You know, I've always had, I don't know about you guys, but there have been a couple interesting competitive games where, you know, they were competitive. They're RTTs. I don't know about you guys, but pre-COVID, RTTs were great. I considered, you know, training grounds before you go into like GTs or majors or something like that. And there were times, I admit, where someone, whether it was myself or someone, offered me like, hey, you know, I'm practicing for this, or this. And even though I understand this is an RTT, I'm willing, you know, you can go first. I would like to see how I can react to going second and things like that. I think 9th edition, that happened back in 8th edition. 9th edition might be a little different. You know, some people say they actually favor going second over going first. I think there's still quite a base out there for in favor of going first right now. But I thought that was interesting, kind of like what you're saying, Paul, in regards of like the understanding of coming to it and saying, well, you know, you can go first so that I can experience going second and figure it out from there and have that kind of layout there.
I think it's just worth a discussion. You know, again, if that's something that matters, you know, or they need to adapt. I mean, there's also that. I mean, I'm a big fan of that too. You know, I guess, but it depends on what you want the outcome to be. And it's just neat seeing what is essentially a brand new perspective on that, and then coming with the context of being active in a completely other game that now follows. I don't know if Warhammer's on the trail of Magic and as far as like how it's played. You know, I don't know. But there are some similarities.
Absolutely. Especially in the way Warhammer is now being released, and we have this consistently evolving environment in which we play in. I don't want to say it's exactly pulled from Magic the Gathering, but there's certainly been some influences there. You can certainly look to successful hobbies and games in the kind of nerd sphere and see which ones that have really held up over time, and then look into the things that you could do to kind of emulate them. But yeah, like, I mean, look at this week. Yeah, what goes off a pre-order this week? Death Watch Space Wolves and the Forge World Index.
Yes.
Let's go 4 years ago. Yeah, what would have been released on this same week? Nothing. a weekly White Dwarf that no one really wanted, you know.
Oh, speaking of the Forge World books, so I found this tip, and I can't remember if it was from Twitter or Instagram or what, but so the Contemptor Dreads, the hip joint on the Contemptor Dreads, it is basically the exact circumference, you know, diameter or whatever, of the drop pod chapter markings.
Huh.
So if you want to put like the Dark Angel symbol or the Blood Angel symbol or whatever on the hip of your dread to further bling it out, it basically fits there with almost no carving, no trimming or whatever.
That's cool.
That's very cool.
Did you guys look at any of the, you know, how there was the listed what's in the Forge World book? Were there any glaring gaps there? I mean, I can think of one, and it's going to harken back to good old last week of October for this year. But are there any that jumped out at you?
Just go ahead and hit the orc one, because I got a little bit of a tirade. But
our baby, the chin orc, which was so cool, has hit the legend slot. She's gone, guys. Pull one out for the chin orc.
You talked about that one a while ago, didn't you?
I did. I liked it a lot. I thought it was thematic. It was cool. It was a fantastic model. It actually had a decent amount of utility. Actually, I think it was Paul who brought it up. He said there was a gentleman he saw running a bunch of these kitted out with just OBSEC units that were just, you know, carpet bombing five-man OBSEC units with a claw or a kill saw on top of people. And it was doing really well, apparently.
Yep.
Well, and there it goes. She's gone. Our baby, man. We hardly knew the. I mean, the model literally existed for like a decade, but we hardly knew the. But yeah, what do you want to say? Feel free to launch into your rant, Red.
Traitor Guard. They're gone, man.
They're gone.
I gotta tell you. I mean, they had a good run. I understand. They even have models on Forge World. You know what I mean? Like they're all there. Yeah. I gotta say, like they've started to redo Traitor Guard in the with Blackstone Fortress.
Yeah.
I mean, they look amazing, right? There's a lot of cool stuff to it. However, I will say there is definitely an opportunity for Traitor Guard to be a thing. You could totally do like what Brood Brothers is to Gene Stealer Cult and Tyranids. You could just make it a chaos thing that, you know, they're chaos Traitor Guard or whatever. It's a new regiment that you tack on and then you can affiliate them and under this whatever. And it, I mean, essentially just playing guard alongside chaos, which would be totally plausible.
There's every precedent in the world for that. I mean, we've got we've got Chaos Space Marines. We've got Space Marines. We've got Imperial Knights. We've got Chaos Knights. Hell, if you want to really go crazy, we've got Eldar and Dark Eldar. Like, why couldn't we have good guard, bad guard?
I mean, yeah.
I think we'll eventually get there, even if it's not right now.
I agree. I think it's just in the works, right? It's just taking its time. I understand. I know I'm being a little maybe overly impatient in that they... I'm not sure why. Like, what do you guys think? Why would you just drop Traitor Guard? Forge World has the models. They're there.
I mean, the only reason that I can think of is, twofold. One, that we're going to see it come out of mainline GW at some point.
Sure. Sure.
Yep.
The other side of it is that you didn't want to put the time into trying to balance it. And when you're reworking the rules, it just felt like you were having to retouch a bunch of guard units for no reason.
Sure. Maybe. And that's, it's fair. Like, I get where they're going with it. I just kind of wish that they could cross that bridge. You know what I mean?
You know, so, and I know nothing, nothing of what the actual reasons are other than the fact that maybe that's it. I mean, there's also the molds may have depreciated to where they just can't be used anymore.
Sure.
So I'm looking for them on Forge World right now. Renegades and Heretics is what they'll be under, yeah?
Yes, they should be.
In the 40K section, not the Horus Heresy section?
The 40K section, yeah. There's a bunch of, there used to be a bunch of upgrade.
Yeah, I've seen them before. I've looked at them before. I can't find them at the moment. So maybe they have dropped them off. And if they have dropped them off, I would assume, if they dropped them off, they went quietly, unlike like the Elysians or other the things of those ilk that had their last chance to buy. I didn't notice a last chance to buy Renegade Militia or whatever it was. So maybe they are getting a revamp. Maybe that's what that means.
And let me play devil's advocate for just a bit. You know, if someone was playing Traitor Guard and they have the guard things, you can still use the guard rules and just be Traitor Guard.
Absolutely. And just spiky up your voice.
You can.
Spikeify.
And you're probably better off that way, like competition wise.
And I'm all on board on that concept. I mean, I'm sitting, playing Iron Warrior Primaris Space Marines using, Blasphemous Imperial
Heresy
rules. Yeah, that is straight up heresy. I mean, think about it. Can you imagine someone using Traitor Guard and then using Cadian rules?
Yeah.
Think about that.
A lot of people are using Palatine Guard. Is it Palatine Guard? They're the new...
Yeah, the Palatine Enforcers.
A lot of people are using those for their Scion models, their Militarum Tempestus models. I always thought if I was going to do Traitor Guard, it was both the Night Lords and Black Legion both have specific guard units they use. And there was there's a Necromunda gang that looks exactly like them. And I'm a big fan. Where is it?
There's the Orlocks and then the Arbites. I mean, they're not Arbites.
It might be the Orlocks. They've got that kind of... They're still semi-regimented looking
dudes. Yeah, that's definitely the Orlocks.
Yeah, it is the Orlocks. Yeah. They're fantastic. I always thought I'd love to have like a regimented unit of those dudes. I mean, of course, if you were doing, unfortunately, the Goliaths are actually a bit too big because they're actually bigger than non-Primaris Space Marines. So if you had those next to your Chaos Space Marine, you might be a little bit dwarfed. It might not make sense unless you could argue that they were like genetically enhanced guys.
And there's even the heroes of the Goliaths are bigger than that. Like they're pretty big.
It was Cordor, sorry.
Oh, okay.
The ones I was thinking about for the Night Lords, the wearing all those wonky masks and
stuff. Oh, masks and rags and stuff. I love those.
You could paint up the mask like their flesh and just get really messed up with it.
I used those for Traitor Guard and 2 years ago at Adepticon.
Yeah, those
look
good.
They look fantastic. Vansar,
they would be really good for like Alpha Legion cultists.
Mm.
Or if you're doing Scions or something.
What would Delac,
is that what you're?
Delac, yeah, sorry.
They could be cultists too. In fact, White Dwarf had some really good stuff too. Yeah, Word Bearers.
Cultists, for sure.
I'm just saying, look, the fact that Traitor Guard aren't there, there are some neat rules that they had. I mean, so there it is different. And so I don't want to sound unsympathetic to people that have to be different or have to change what they were doing before. Because that's really what the biggest blow of this stuff is, like, yeah, your stuff is getting legend rules and you can play it if you want, but you can't play it outside of your house. You're gonna have our time.
You don't have to go home, but you can't play here.
Yeah. I mean, so granted, I know that everyone knows that, but it's not the magic bullet, that they're the spoonful of sugar to make it go down that you aren't going to get to play with your stuff as often as you used to.
So here's one that I noticed, and I'm a little bit annoyed by this, but I'm not overly annoyed. So one of my favorite Baneblade models was Storm, what's it called? The one with the broadsides, the one with the las cannon sticking out of its sides.
They can all have las cannons.
Stormboom, whatever. It's all just the same word.
The thunderstorm. Yeah.
Yes.
The Bane Blaster.
It's the one we had the twin. It had the twin battle cannon in the front, and then it had the top gun, and then it had all the las cannons, all the heavy bolters around. It's now been switched to only being in Horus Heresy, where it had rules in the last book. And so that does annoy me a little bit, because that was one of my favorite tanks. I bought that. It's one of my favorite Forge World models that I purchased. Extremely expensive as it is. And now it's gone. So it's the Stormhammer. And it's just such a fantastic looking model. You remember Raiden? Anybody remember the
Raiden?
Remember the arcade game Raiden?
The
ship, and there's always this over the top, ridiculous looking opponents that just had guns sticking out all over the place, and they'd shoot you with this barrage of bullets. You had that exact flight pattern to get through them and kill them in stages. That's what I thought of when I looked at that. That's why I had to buy it. So I'm a little bit annoyed that's gone to Legends. But I have a concern, gentlemen. Uh-oh. I have a concern about this Forge World book, which I hope is unheralded. But I'm going to put out my naysaying now so I can hopefully be proven wrong later. Cast your minds back to the last Forge World book. Now, I discussed this with Paul before we jumped on. But that last Forge World book, there was broken elements of that index from the first day it came out to the last day of 8th edition. Throughout the entirety of 8th edition, there was something broken to be pulled from that single index. And I hope that is not the case on this one. I mean, when that first came out, Fire Raptors, off their guts. In the last days of 8th edition, Leviathans and Chaplain Dreadnoughts, off their guts. Consistently throughout a 3-year edition, that one index consistently had elements that broke the game. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that because we know, and it's been confirmed, this Forge World book has been written by the same guys who write the codexes. It's the same group of writers.
I believe so. I don't know that to be true, but I believe so.
I don't know that for a fact, but that's what I've been informed of. I haven't got them stating that in anything. But yes, my hope is, fingers crossed, it's good. And it has units worth taking, but none of it that's going to be overtly or obviously just a better choice than anything you can find in a codex.
Yeah, I don't mind things being good. I want things to be powerful and strong and fun to take, but not overbalancing. That's what you're...
Yeah, I suppose that's what I'm getting at.
It shouldn't throw out the codex, right? You shouldn't look at every other every other dreadnought in the Space Marine Codex and say, the Forge World ones are clearly better, right?
Yeah. Well, so I mean, what happens if a Leviathan gets -1 damage? I mean, everyone gets that's essentially giving everyone the Ironstone Leviathan that broke the game for the last like 6 months of 8th edition.
Bring it on.
But if it's got the point adjustments to make it relevant, then it's not an issue. Right. You pay 400 points for the privilege, so no problems. You could have bought a Primarch. Instead, you bought a Leviathan. Cool. No one's going to argue. but if the thing's 200 points, everyone's going to lose their minds.
That's a good point. But we're made to be seen. We're doing a little bit of speculation. We don't have it in our hands just yet.
Of course,
at the time of recording, we will hopefully get it pretty soon and then bring you all the goodness, all the broken combos.
Now, where I'm interested, because I actually expected this book to come a lot later and to have a lot more in it than it does. And I wonder if you guys can pick what I'm alluding to.
I'm bad at pop quizzes.
I know.
Yeah. So they told us, I'd say almost over 2 years ago now, that they were going to release a 40K rule set for all the 30K Mechanicum Tagmata stuff.
Oh, right. Which yes.
I lost my freaking mind about. I was like, oh my God, there are so many incredible models in that.
I can't believe. Yeah. As someone, again, I own those and really want to use them.
Dude, look, when they said that, I was just sitting there, like, I had to hold my head and go through all the Horus Heresy stuff, and I was like, I want some of those, I'm going to get some of those, and the Thanatar, oh my God, so cool, and it just hasn't eventuated. Is it something, have they just forgotten about that? Have they dropped the ball and just been like, oh, we'll just go a different direction with that stuff? Or, because when this book came out, I expected it to have them in it, to be honest, and maybe that was a false expectation, but I thought this was the perfect time for them to do it.
It would have been a great time. Again, I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah, man. God, there's so much. Yeah, it's kind of weird. We're getting all this stuff, but then we're thinking about all this stuff yet to do. You know, and I think, if I had to bet, again, if I was a betting man, I think Traitor Guard will be on the docket at some point in a meaningful way, like in a way that makes sense and gels with everything else. I think that we will get the 30K stuff coming out. Because there's models, why wouldn't it be? The Hoplites made it over.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It will.
Yeah, well, the thing is, they've done it for all the 30K knights are already in 40K, essentially. Not that those, I don't think they were ever suggested that they were, but only 30K. Just about every 30K, it is every 30K Space Marine unit, yeah, from Mastodons and Fellblades to Rapier batteries and stuff. That's all made the transition over. I mean, is there any other range that is exclusive to Horus Heresy now, or is it all pretty much doing double duty?
Well, so I think that's, I can't remember where I saw it, but. And I
well, the specialty units on the legions are still,
yeah. Of course, yep. And I wouldn't suggest they do that because the legions have evolved the 10,000 years past where these things were viable, and they were viable in a legion sense when there was 10,000 dudes, so you could afford to have 1,000 terminators rather than having 100 terminators.
Well, I'd say in 40K they're doing that now with Primaris. They're making their specializations, right? Outriders, yeah. Eradicators, Hellblasters, or Intercessors, right? You've got Intercessors, the basic tactical squad of just straight up bolt gun weapons versus Hellblasters. Everybody's got a plasma weapon. It's very much like a Primaris 40K version of the 30K Legions.
Gilliman showing up. He's like, you know what? Not.
Yep.
We're rolling it back.
That's exactly what it is.
I was wrong. Sorry, guys. Wrong.
but with that though, I can't remember where I saw it, but I'm pretty sure I've seen somewhere where they said that future 30K content is not going to be rolled into 40K.
Yeah, yeah. I remember hearing that as well. I can't remember if it was from an official channel, but I remember that in some kind of official capacity. When maybe it was around the time when they were saying that they wouldn't transition over to 9th edition rule set with 30K, which, as far as I'm concerned, the vast majority, I play 30K as well, and the vast majority of people I talk to like that rule set now. After they did essentially a 7.5 update.
Yeah, they knocked out some of the real hard edges and rough spots. Yep.
And it's got a different skill set to what we'd think of in 8th edition, and then again what we think of in 9th edition. But funnily enough, the missions for the 30K missions are a lot more like the 9th edition missions than they were the 8th edition ones. A lot there's very few Horus Heresy missions that are just kill points. They all usually have an aspect of, you know, if you have more, but it'll be attached to your legion, like your kill point stuff. Like Dark Angels, the one I play, we have to have killed more units of them than they have of us, or else they get a victory point.
Yeah, and they have progressive objectives and stuff in there as well.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, they have a really, I personally think the 30K missions are the best missions G-Dubs has ever produced. They're so thematically perfect. To my mind, at least, and how I like to immerse myself in it, especially in a narrative-driven game like 30K, is that I think they're fantastic.
I do feel when I'm playing 30K that I do feel like there's a more weight on the individual game itself.
Yeah, that's very well said.
I like that.
Mm.
Man, you guys get me excited. I want to play some 30K.
I'm really keen to play some 30K.
Dude, so I read... Okay, let me, before we get too far off the topic, is that the stuff that's coming out, think about the stuff that's getting legended, and such a weird term, but it's because there's all kind of reasons, right? But it also has a factor of they're not going to spend time thinking about that unit anymore. It's not just being carried forward as something that with arcane thought or weird rules or whatever, and so it's going away, and there's nothing to say that stuff won't eventually come back. And, you know, that's probably what we're seeing some of these things. And that may be why we're not seeing 30K come in there. It's like, man, when they're looking at the whole picture of Warhammer 40K, like, do we really have time to go and balance these 40 other units, 20 other units? You know, let's focus on this stuff. Let's trim it down or whatever. I think it's kind of getting lean and mean only to be built back up again in the future.
Yeah, come back in some kind of other capacity or something like that. I can see that.
But talking about 30K, I just finished the second book in the Siege of Terra series.
What do you think of that?
I know I'm way behind. I love it. They've actually been really good. But what struck me is one of the most interesting things is that over the years, so let's just say over the years of Warhammer, over the 30 years of Warhammer, but they've struggled or continued to try to nuance the Chaos Gods, three of the Chaos Gods. I'll say they're trying to figure out, like, what does Slaanesh really mean? What does Tzeentch really mean? Mm. What does Nurgle really mean? And they've got these, you know, these three traits that are like super in your face, but then there's all this complexity behind them.
And Khorne is just, rah!
Khorne has stayed the same.
And, he has not changed.
You know, like, I think most of Angron's lines are blood, skulls. Mm-hmm. What was that, Angron? Skulls, blood. Run it by me one more time. Blood and skulls.
Funnily enough, it's so very comparable to Space Wolves. No. What's that, Space Wolves? Dog, wolf, wolf, doggo, papa. Yeah. Fair enough.
So, but I really like that. I came, it never shook me in the novel. I just always like, yep, thanks for being you, buddy.
So, yeah, I feel like Slaanesh is still Slaanesh and Tzeentch. Tzeentch is a hard concept to have and I suppose by dint of the definition, you shouldn't have a consistent trait.
The trait is change.
The trait is it's going to be different in different settings. Slaanesh, I feel like, is one they could still take a lot of time fleshing out. Nurgle, I feel like, is in a really good place, though. Like, I know what Nurgle stands for, and I love that it's got this duality of pestilence and decay, but also life and rebirth. And I feel like the fact that I can think about those things two together in that single god means it's quite well fleshed out, at least to my mind.
Even the Khan in this, and I'm not trying to show any spoilers there, the Khan's like, yeah, they're diseased, but I guess it makes them stronger?
Yeah, they're falling apart, but they're enhanced. This is interesting.
But it's kind of neat that he didn't turn away from it either, you know, or didn't try to come up with a weird justification for it either.
Well, it's the same as the Emperor's children, though. They hurt themselves and they get more powerful. What? Yeah.
But I've really enjoyed it. I've started the third one already. And again, I know I'm a little bit behind, but I'm really enjoying that series. And, you know, Sanguinius, my boy, does not disappoint.
Well, he's gonna, because you know what happens.
Dang.
No spoilers.
Dead. Dead. They killed you. Kill your boy.
But how they do it? How so? And then the fact that he knows that this is already printed. I don't know what's going to happen in the books, or whatever. But you know, he fights 8-9 bloodthirsters. Mm. I mean, not at one time, but certainly within quick succession.
What's the order that they go in? Is it Satyrine?
That's the fourth one.
Okay. What's the first one?
First one is Siege of Terra.
Siege of Terra. Yeah.
Yeah,
because there's the Solar War, there's the
Solar War is the first one. Lost in the Dam is the second one.
Yep. Oh, there you go. Sorry.
Yep.
Then there's the first wall.
Is the third one.
Okay. Yeah.
And Satyrine is the fourth.
Yeah. And unlike, so for those following at home, if you don't haven't cracked into the Siege of Terra novels, they're not like the Horus Heresy, where you can read up to Flight of the Eisenstein, and then it's a choose your own adventures from then on, just like. Whichever one, you just follow the breadcrumbs of whichever storylines or characters you like, enjoy the best. This one is a linear story, yeah?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, very, very linear. Almost, I mean, basically takes up where he left off. But I'm really digging Abaddon in there.
A lot of my hobby groups here, these guys read things as they come out. I don't have the time to read them as they come out. I just get to them when I get to them. But I don't want my friends to hold back talking about the stuff when they're keen about it. So I know a lot about what happens, and I love what they did with Abaddon. I absolutely adore what they did with Abaddon. The Abaddon that I love, and the one that I love the most, is the guy that rocks up at the start of the Black Legion models from ADB. But that Abaddon is peak Abaddon. he's yelled at like four Chaos Primarchs and told them, you guys messed up. Horus was weak. I'm going to show us how it's done. And essentially, that's my guy. Yeah. He hasn't lost 13 Black Crusades for, you know, for whatever justification, you know, re-rack justification G-Dub wants to make. He's just the ultimate, he's about to do what he wants to the galaxy, and no one's going to stop him. And that was the guy that they wrote in that last bit. Well, I feel, I haven't read it word for word, but from what my mates described to me, like, yes, that is the warrior of Baden. Going out, wants to go out on his shield or take as many as he can with him. He's still like this proud warrior king that he was at the start of the first, like, at the start of Horus Rising or whatever it was.
Yep. And Blood Angels gets a lot of cool scenes in here. There's a scene with Rauldron who, you know, it gets, I don't want to give spoilers to anyone who hasn't read it. I think these books are recent enough to where, you know, you can certainly respect that for folks. And again, I've just kind of come to it myself, gotten to it. But there's a scene in there where I just kind of smiled the whole way through. I'm like, yep, this is happening right now. Yep.
Nice. He's got a model, isn't he? Is he first captain?
Yes.
Yeah, yep. First captain. He's not the jump pack guy. Ascalon is the Sanguinary Guard captain, and he's the Rauldron is the first captain of the Blood Angels, wears red armor.
What's your 30K Legion, Red?
Iron Warriors.
Nice.
I do have some Night Lords too, but mostly Iron Warriors.
We kicked your butt, Red. I don't want no spoilers, but
here's an interesting one. I mean, so there's a lot of my Legion, Dark Angels. We had the Thramis Crusade, and then we did. So I don't want to spoil anything, but we do have a small part to play in the Siege of Terra. But the biggest part that Dark Angels had to play was in the Scouring. I'm interested to see if they do novels of the Scouring and of the running battle chasing the traitor legions into the Eye of Terra, because the Dark Angels. So what happens with Caliban, which I'm sure everyone knows, happens after the Scouring. Like, the Dark Angels return home. They've just had like another decade of war on top of the Great Crusade. They haven't been back to Caliban in years and years and years, and they're exhausted. They just wanted to take a seat. As soon as they rock up, they get fired upon. But like, apparently the scorched earth, like the literal damage the Dark Angels do during the Scouring, like, they go after traitor homeworlds and just salt the earth, you know.
I hope so.
That Luther book just dropped, right? I'm really interested.
I pre-ordered the special edition. I'm keen on that.
You're gonna have to give me maybe offline just a little bit of a down low on what goes on there.
Be my pleasure, man.
Because I don't think I'm gonna get my hands on it, given how things go with those pre-orders.
Yeah, that's a little gripe of mine. I wish it wasn't so long between the special edition and the regular one, because people are only just getting their hands on the Lion book now, and I had the Lion book almost 2 months ago, I feel like. Maybe it was only a month ago.
I don't mind, COVID. Though, because it lets the people, because it's there's so much special stuff that, like, collectible media, it's weird to purchase it sometimes. But the fact, I mean, you could absorb that book and have it, and it's your special thing for, you know, and you paid for it. You know, I don't have any problem with that.
I guess my issue really is probably more along the lines with the purchasing method that goes along with it. And don't get me wrong, like, I love GW for doing it, because I mean, I've got the Gaunt's Ghost material, Dan Abnett's like collection, the most recent stuff that came out, the Sabbat Crusade, like the book that lays it out. I've got the map, the leather map kind of deal, like, awesome. Sick. Just amazing stuff, right? However, I admit I was only fortunate enough to get just the book straight from GW. Everything else I had to wait over time to kind of pick up off of secondhand, because it can be really difficult to get some of those pre-order stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, exceptionally difficult.
That's why I'm not chasing the limited edition stuff that often. You know, but I do think it's cool when people, if it's your passion and you want it, and that you know, you got a place for that bookshelf, you feel better owning it, then go for it.
I mean, they've done an awesome job with these, like you said, the Lion book, the limited edition Primarch books are amazing. I have the Iron Warrior and the Night Lord books, and those limited edition books are for the Primarchs. I mean, it does. Like you said, you know, put it on your bookshelf and everything. It's just so cool to have as a collectible.
I know this isn't a realistic thing that GW would ever do, but for the longest time, do you remember the Zone Mortalis set that Forge World had? It was modular, and you know, now it's from Necromunda. But for the longest time, I was like, they could do so much more with that. Like, they could bring out like the Iron Cage Zone Mortalis tiles, and it's just built to be booby traps. And you remember Mousetrap? I don't know if you guys had the. Had the board game Mousetrap.
You're familiar.
Like, second time you play it, you lost half the pieces. But that's what I'm envisioning. I mean, technically, not something like that, but you know what I mean. So, like, a specific board for like an ambush style zone or Talus thing, like where you have booby traps and stuff. Not that you actually make your models fly across the table or anything like that, or trigger, you know, trapdoors and things like that, but you know, thematically. And I just think that the sky's the limit. But naturally, people could just do that at home. You could buy the empty tiles and just build your own stuff like that. But man, some of the out of production Forge World Realm of Battle tiles are so incredibly gorgeous. I'm lucky enough, I've got the generator one at home.
Yeah, like a display board. Exactly.
I've been waiting for an excuse to paint it up because it's freaking beautiful.
Yeah, I agree. I know we're rambling all over the place, and I appreciate you hugging in with us. But yeah, this is a we took a ride.
Mm.
That's what we've done. We kind of strayed off. I know we will have bonus Orktober content next week.
Mm. So well, yeah. We should talk Squigs at some point. I feel like Squigs. I want to see Squigs get their own like Codex supplement Squigs.
You can dip an Age of Sigmar. You're almost there.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, let's see a Mangler Squig in 40K, or Squigos as like dedicated, like giant Squigos and Squigos as dedicated transports in this new Codex. Anyway, that now I'm truly rambling wish listing. Because I totally wasn't before with the Mousetrap Zone Mortalis table.
You were doing great.
That's perfectly reasonable.
Great. Yeah. I think we can be indulged every now and then to ramble on. But again, check out, if you take away one tip, is that those drop pod chapter symbols fit on the hip of your soon to be coveted Contemptor Dreads with just minimal trimming.
Yeah, that's actually pretty cool. I wonder how many other of those little secrets there are around the place.
Yeah. I didn't find that out. I saw it somewhere. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to try it. And sure enough, it does. Blood Angel mm-hmm. symbols going right on the hips. Those Contemptor Dreads.
That's sweet. I've been building a couple of Redemptor Dreads. And I disliked the model for the longest time, but I'm in now. I can't say it's my favorite, but I'm growing. It's growing on me.
I like it that, you know, it's one of those, this design of kit, you don't have to commit to the weapon options.
Yeah, it's very modular.
So I mean, the gun is on a nub, on a peg that will fit mm-hmm. right in that slot, and you can it'll pressure fit. You can just pull it in and slide it out, and replace it with the plasma gun or the rotary gun or whatever, and at your leisure.
Mm. Well, I've got a magnetizing mine, but same diff. It's you very don't very
have to, if you're doing another one, you don't have to do it. It will just pressure fit.
Really?
Yeah.
Really breaking my brain, Paul.
Yeah, you don't have to. I mean, seriously, it will just slide in and slide out.
Oh, it does. Oh. Hopefully people have stuck around for this bit of content. Paul just broke my brain. Because I'm doing a couple of these for fluff reasons. Definitely for fluff reasons.
Totally fluff reasons.
Totally like forgettable in game now. Definitely not undercosted for what they do.
Well, guys, thank y'all for hanging in here tonight. I hope y'all enjoyed the segment with our guest in the beginning, and we will be back next week.
See ya.
See you then.
See you guys.
You can't handle the truth.